Hello, you're listening to Otaku Spirit Anime Cast. My name is Andrew, and I'm joined here, as always, with Chris.
Yo!
And today's episode, because I feel bad. Last week, I was like, we're doing a mailbag episode. But I'm like, but there's also like these three very important news articles that I wanted to get Chris's opinion on. And then we went on for like an hour and 10 minutes straight just on those, and we got barely any time for actual mailbag. So this is an official mailbag episode. So for the folks in our Discord of Otaku Spirit, if you haven't been there yet, we have links everywhere on otakuspirit.com. If you're on YouTube, it's in our description. It's on the Twitter handle, Otaku Spirit, and all that stuff. So, but people submit questions there, and we have to answer them because they're getting older.
But what if I want to talk about existential, you know, life-altering things?
Then you'll do that, and then we'll have to have another mailbag episode. But yes, again, we're at otakuspirit.com. That's where all of our links are, social media links, and all that good stuff, and ways to support us, including Patreon, tips link. If you're on YouTube, you can become a member of the channel. Greatly, greatly, greatly appreciate everybody that supports the channel. It's really fantastic. It means a lot to us. But yes, let's do it. Let's actually answer some questions. Are you ready?
No.
Okay, never mind. How about now?
Yeah, I'm starting to feel it.
It's enough. God Serena 8008 says Happy New Year's. I kind of wonder, is that God Serena like digital B-O-O-B? It's got to be 8008. You got to give me the story of 8008, otherwise I'm going to assume. Happy New Year's to you, senpais. I'm watching Happy New Year's, even though it's way late.
Halfway through the year?
Mm-hmm. But to be fair, they posted it on the 8th of January. So it was
okay.
So they were late
yeah,
too.
They were late too.
So, anyways, whatever excuse I can have, I'm watching all of Bungo Stray Dogs, Misfit of Demon King Academy, and Don't Toy with Me Nisanagatoro's first season to catch up. So that's a very broad spectrum of different types of shows. But Bungo Stray Dogs is amazing, though. So that's a good thing. Anyways, let me say I love Dazai, hilarious and charming mentor. Don't really get Anos. Like, why doesn't he just say that he's a demon king from 2,000 years ago? Does he doubt himself, or is he just trying to do say nothing to but react to them until they remember who he is? Because that's messed up and shouldn't work. Lastly, apparently there are people that like the way Nagatoro teases Naoto. I guess that's senpai, right? I always know him as senpai, so it's like, yeah. Wait, is that his name? I didn't realize before I started this show that I, too, was one of those people. Gosh, that's freeing to say. Okay, back to the question. Now that my type of woman is out there, Andrew, Chris, what is your type of woman? And then rate the type of women. Okay, let's start off with the... What was the first one in there? The Anos. Didn't it say in the show why he doesn't say anything?
Because they are...
Because he knows that the history has changed, and I think he's trying to find out who's changed
who
it.
Who changed the world,
and
yeah.
So if he comes out and says, I'm the Demon King, and when the history itself and is been rewritten, it's not a good thing. So it technically makes sense that he doesn't say anything.
He was effectively the hero of the story, and they changed the history, and so he technically is the bad guy of the story now. So he's trying to find out who changed history so that he can
I don't remember exactly
problem.
What happened, because the hero came to him, and you come to find out that him and the hero were pretty on, like,
yeah.
were on sync. Like, they knew what needed to happen. Mm-hmm. And so he, yes, reincarnated himself, sealed off the area to divide the human and the demons, and I don't remember exactly what all was changed. I know that they like, dumbed down magic and all that kind of stuff, which typically right. has with reincarnations, but I couldn't remember exactly. I know that he... There, that's what it was. There is a demon lord in the area, but it's not him.
Right.
And there's all the generals and stuff, and so he's running into the generals, and he's trying to figure out who changed the history. So yeah, there's a reason why he doesn't. Even though I haven't watched that show in like 2 years, mm-hmm. it's all starting to come back to me. But yeah, there's a reason. There's a reason. So I hopefully I didn't spoil it for you, and you just haven't got to that point. I think it answers that question like within three episodes or
yeah,
so.
Yeah, three or four episodes.
Hopefully by now, a few months later,
you're actually going, Chris, Andrew...
Yes, I know.
This happened, and this happened, and you guys are talking like you didn't actually watch the show. No.
Yeah. There's like a part of it, like, one, there's so many reincarnation shows, they get mixed up, but two, there's like an aspect of, yes, we're watching a crap ton of shows in between those two, and I didn't watch second season because they delayed it, so is that even coming back on yet? Is that...
I don't know. I need to go and
I think
finish
it's fall
catching
now,
up on
probably.
It.
Oof. Kubo came back, at least. So what was the other one? You said something about Nagatoro, I think. But yes, it was very difficult to watch that one early on. We've mentioned that before.
Yeah, apparently, first couple of episodes were really, really hard to watch. But I did, it did show itself very quickly, and I started to really enjoy it.
Yeah, so there was a reason. It wasn't just mean-hearted for no reason. So yeah, the final part of it is, what is your type of woman out there? And well, Chris, what is your type of woman? And then rate the following. I don't really have a preference. I mean, I guess I don't really ever think about it. When it comes to anime, I have plenty of opinions, but I don't really have much opinion in the real world. Just somebody that's got a good smile and is a kind-hearted person. That's about all I think I would care about.
Yeah, that's the direction I would go for. But what I'm attracted to and what I tend to attract are very, very opposite.
I'm looking for this, and this is what happened, which is always the difficulty in the fact that, yes, technically, a lot of people put on masks, and so it's very difficult to, I guess, decipher people sometimes.
Yeah.
It's reality. But to your list, I guess before I would say this, there's a big difference between what I like in anime and what I would like in real life. That's just like the whole Yandere argument. As much as people love Yandere characters, like, you don't really want that.
You don't really want that. That's a fire. You don't really want it.
I don't really want that in the real world. So you have, I'm going to assume what these are from. You only have, like, literally just first names, in some cases last names. You put Rin, I'm assuming Rin Tosaka, 100% love her to death. 10 out of 10, yes. Yes, yes. Now, again, she's not too bad of a tsundere. Like, she's not off-putting tsundere. She's not violent tsundere, I guess the best way to put it. So I would definitely rate Rin a 10 out of 10 for me. She's good. She's driven. She's got a little bit of something you need to break through first, but for the most part, she's great.
I really, really like her cute side, so I'm going to give her a definite 8.
An 8.
Mm-hmm.
Hori, which I'm guessing is Hori Mia. I'm going to be perfectly honest, I don't remember much about her. I mean, she was fine. I don't have any problem with her. She's got a cute personality. She's caring for family, which is great. So I'd probably go 8. I mean, I guess 8's good.
Do we have Marin in this list? yeah, I'd probably give her a 6 or 7. She's very, very cutesy, very, very sweet. She's just a little bit too aloof for my taste. But yeah, definitely sweet.
Here's where we get into the, I don't know if I really want that in real life. I don't know that I necessarily want to marry / get with a lady that is killing people nightly. As much as it's fun in the show, and she's super good looking, she's got that protective nature in her, she's trying really hard, I can't say that I'd really want to get with her. So I'm gonna, unfortunately, waifu material, 10 out of 10, but for real relationship, 3? 3 out of 10?
She has a solid cute side, though.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, so, like, I would have to agree with Andrew, the waifu side.
But they were all bad people.
They were all bad.
But they were all bad.
I'd give her
According
9.
According to the organization, they were all bad.
She's super cute. She is ridiculously cute. So, yeah, I'd put her at a 9.
Nagatoro. Again, great in show. Not so much IRL. And it really is one of those things of, I'm going to put it in perspective of the beginning moments. And it's like, no, I'm sorry. And she's way too annoying at times. Like, I'm already getting sort of fatigued of the series in the second season. I still think she's cute. She got the tan girl, best girl thing going on with her. I love a lot of the teasing humor that she does. But at the same time, girl's nasty in a lot of regards. And she can correct that over time when she has feelings with him, but she's still a nasty girl. It's hard for me to get past that. I mean, how many people did she torture before she met him? Which, people can have redemption. I'm not saying against. I've had my problems in the past. But, again, we're going based on Nagatoro in the show. Not the manga as it ends. So I'm going to go with, she'll go down in the 3 area.
She's going with a 3, wow.
Maybe 4. But no higher than that, because she's still kind of annoying, and she's Yes, she's a bully.
What about the other one? Senpai girl.
His senpai?
Nah.
His senpai is literally a zero. Not my type of girl. I'm sorry. Are you talking about the same show or a different show?
The other show.
Kubo or...
No.
Uzaki-chan. Uzaki-chan? Oh, that's right there with Nagataro. She's really? Super annoying.
Is it more because how obnoxious she is?
Oh, yeah.
You see, I could
Both of them, they have cute sides and everything, it's the teasing Nagatoro, side that's super obnoxious.
Nagatoro, it has the problem of the bullying side, which really crushes, because I do really like Nagatoro. Her artwork, everything about her is absolutely perfect. If it wasn't for her bullying side, I would probably rate her really high. But I would probably put her more in a five area because I really, really had a massive hurdle. I mean, we've talked about this several times. I mean, I was messaging Andrew very quickly on in the show. I was like, I don't know if I like this show. I don't know why people like this show. Luckily, I gave it a couple more episodes and I really, really fell in love with the show, but I really did not like Nagatoro. Uzaki, I love Uzaki. I get past her obnoxiousness because of how adorable she is. And so I would put her high in the eight area.
And that's a difficult thing. It's like with Uzaki-chan, you know why she's doing it. And so it's a little bit more easier to... I mean, Nagatoro, you know why she's doing it, but she still is a bully. With Uzaki... We're getting so many messages for this. Uzaki, we know what she's doing. She wants to hang out with him. And so it's a lot more easier to deal with. So yeah, technically Uzaki's like probably more up in a six and seven. I love her design and everything. She's super cute. I love the Chisai overly thing. But yeah... Anyways, I don't like the short hair, though. That's about the only thing visually that I don't like about her. She's a little overstacked, but her hair being short is kind of annoying.
It would be literally perfect if we had switched the artworks for both characters.
We do get to see.
I'm not big. Uzaki is okay. I do find her overall artwork okay, but Nagatoro, I love her artwork.
This girl.
Yeah, I mean, I would absolutely switch personalities and everything and just let Uzaki be the bully and Nagatoro be the obnoxious girl, and she'd be perfect.
Next one's difficult. The next one is, these are all literally, there's a difference, like I said before, difference between waifu and what you would actually want in the real world. Power? Sorry. Zero. I can't get with a girl that doesn't flush, man. I just can't. I hate when people don't flush. And if girl's like every 2 minutes she leaves in there, I'm like, why didn't you flush? She's like, I can't flush that. That came out of me. I'm like, girl, I can't. You gotta flush. The only way it would work out is if I actually replaced the toilet with an auto flusher. That's literally the only way it would ever work out. And even then, when you go to hang out, like you go to a party, you know, like a Christmas party with some family or something, and then suddenly somebody's like, all right, who didn't flush the toilet? And I'm like, it's power. Like, I wouldn't even hesitate. I was just like, power.
It's actually funny. I'm actually really, really freaking...
He wants to watch the show now because of...
No, I don't. I have this massive thing against people who do that, who leave stuff in the toilet, and that is like...
I like how all the discussion around power is just the flushing. She's fun, though. Like, she's super fun. She's got that... She's dumb. Let's be honest. She's dumb. And that there is a lot of fun that comes from that in the show itself, because technically Denji's dumb. And so they work really well together as the duo of stupidity. Anyways.
But honestly,
if the world had devils in it and stuff, and they were fighting and stuff, yeah. Heck yeah. 10 out of 10. I need somebody to be on my side all the time. But it's just not technically that. And I need a flusher.
You need a flusher.
Just gotta flush it, man. There's nothing worse than going in to do your own business and you have to sit in the smell because somebody didn't flush. Okay, moving on.
I being honest, when I watched an episode and a half, I don't know. I seen her and I did get the intrigue of her. She's a fascinating character. She has a very, very intriguing personality. The flushing thing was a massive, she is not in my waifu territory at all. So,
back to it.
I'm going to probably say, I mean, she does look good, artwork wise, but the flushing thing, so I'm going to go ahead and do 3 because the flushing thing.
3 out of 10 did not flush.
Did not flush.
Let's move on from that. Thanks, God, Serena. 8008. Death Metalhead said, hello, my friend, fellow otakus. I can't read right now. My question this time around is rather simple compared to the previous entries. This question will be kind of a multifaceted, so here goes. How do you prefer your environment to be while you're watching anime? By that, I mean a few things. Do you use a second? Do you use a sound bar, surround sound, headphones while you watch? Do you turn off the lights in the room to be more theatrical experience? Do you sit right to left on the couch? This is getting very specific. Or do you watch on computer desk? Do you watch every anime away from home? Do you watch together or alone? We used to watch shows together, but then at some point, schedules were conflicting, and now he's in a different house at this point. But yeah, for myself, it's mostly on a television with a soundbar. Sometimes I'll watch on a laptop if I just want to get away from, you know, just kind of chill outside if it's nice outside. For the most part, it's just a TV with soundbar. I always have to do on computer. I barely ever watch on any sort of app or anything because I have to take screenshots for videos and stuff, so I have to do that.
I used to watch on my bed. Now I watch in the living room. I have a Roku sound bar with a full sound surround system, so the 4 speakers with the subwoofer and everything like that.
Woofer, gotta get that woofer in there.
Sound woofer, yes, gotta have that subwoofer
with no adjustments on it. I am blown away. There is a sound system with a subwoofer that does not have a subwoofer volume bar. I'm still blown away with that. Do you ever find it in there?
It's there, but it's not
like it doesn't have functional. Like range.
Yeah, all it does is high, low, and
yeah, that's
and
weird
off or something like that. So
weird. Anyway, sorry.
But yeah, I enjoy it that way. I'm technically on a Lazy Boy. I'm thinking about switching the Lazy Boy and the couch, switching those two up. Side to side. I'm very, very antsy. I'm not very good at sitting still very long, so I am constantly back and forth.
Yeah, I think the only other thing is lighting. I don't like to have all lights off. Like currently you guys see in the videos, I have a LED system that's at least at the top. I don't like direct lights. I hate light bulbs. So I always had like an upward lamp at some point, and then I
stole it.
LEDs. Well, I didn't need any more because I had the LEDs, and the LEDs give enough ambient light. I just want a solid ambient light. I don't like direct light at all. So that pretty much sets it for me.
I hardly ever have any lights on in the house. So that one little lamp that I stole from Andrew is pretty much all my light, and it's very, very dim.
Yeah. I know it's I will admit, I do miss the days that me and Chris used to watch stuff together. Because there is an element of experience in watching a show is completely different between alone and with somebody else. Because obviously, like comedies, I was talking to somebody the other day about that. Comedies is definitely where it's at. I mean, I always admit, Hotter Than Goose probably not as funny as I think it was. It's just me and Chris watched together, so we just bounce off each other. So even if I don't get a joke and he gets a joke and he laughs, I'm going to laugh at it. And if I see a joke that he doesn't get and I start laughing, he's probably going to laugh with me, I'm going to assume. There is an element of you bouncing off each other. And when the both hits, it's just hysterical. It's great like that. Like the whole stupid box thing. Let's just put that in the box. Let's put it over here to the side. Set it on fire. Me and Chris just lost it with that whole thing. So
we still bring it up here and there every once in a while.
Yeah. That and naming off the entire first episode of Tenchi Muyo.
I really, really, really wanted to find that on on a clip so that I could put that in the Discord at one point. I could not find it.
I was trying to buy it a while back because it was like clearancing on Right Stuff, but they didn't have all of them. They just had the box. You know, like they used to sell the box with like volume one in it,
mm-hmm.
and then you'd have to buy the others to put in the box. In the box, get it?
I totally caught it like way back
here. I'm not gonna buy
that. I put
that
it in the river and sent it down.
I'm not gonna buy that and hope I can get the other parts of it. So hopefully somebody rescues it at some point. But yeah,
That really needs to be rescued. But the problem is it needs a resurgence of some sort.
Yeah.
So otherwise, it's not gonna sell because nobody knows what it is.
Nobody knows what it is.
It's a shame. It really is. No matter how hard we tell everybody, but
yeah. I know it seems like an odd series of questions, but I'm curious. I was thinking the other day of how everyone prefers to pay attention to things in their own way. I agree with that. There's times where, even when we were watching stuff together, where he might be bored or fidgeting or just not caring about something, and I'm getting into it. And so there is an opposite effect when you do watch something with other people, or maybe you didn't catch something you want to rewind, but then you're like, no, I don't want to rewind because Chris is watching too, and it might mess things up for him. There is an element that there is kickback for watching it with somebody else.
Yeah,
or they can find it funny and you don't find it funny and you want to be serious about it and they're ruining it because they're laughing at it because they think it's absurd.
I can concur on that one. There's been many times where I'm watching something and I just know Andrew's hating it and I'm sure that it's the exact opposite. And it's like I wish.
Like, if we watched Farming Life in Another World together, I would probably be ripping into it the entire time. And Chris, like, stop. Or the reverse with something else that's, like, super brutal or something.
He'd
be like,
no, it's funny.
Oh, say Summertime Render. Man, can you imagine me watching Summertime Render together?
Oh, God, no.
I'd be, like, gushing the entire... I'd be so focused, and you'd be fidgeting. I'd be like, why doesn't Chris like this as much as I do?
I'm actually glad we watched that separate. But Farming Life would be weird because it...
He said Farming Life and a tweet comes out of his wrist. That's so interesting.
Farming Life would be weird mostly because of the fact that it would be odd that because I enjoy it just for what it is, I would find this kind of weird mix between hating the fact that Andrew is tearing into it and at the same time having fun with him just blasting it to smithereens.
I'd be blasting it.
And it's funny because...
The jokes I come up with... Okay, suddenly somebody's pregnant.
Somebody's
that pregnant. Makes perfect sense.
I would be of twofold. I probably would absolutely. I don't think that we could have watched Isekai Harem together. I Harem in a Labyrinth. I think that I would probably get too defensive on that one.
Well, I didn't really bash that one so much till like halfway through it, and I realized it wasn't going to be an actual harem. But no, I was praising it early on, and Korobota desu kara. It's a kobold, obviously. It's a kobold. I just love that. It's like a dramatic swipe, and then she just kind of steps aside. Well, it is a kobold. Man, that killed it really easily. Well, that is a kobold. It's the cutest scene. I love that scene. Anyways, what else? If you Death Metalhead says, if you were wondering, I always watch with the lights off. Soundbar volume cranked up to the maximum experience, or for the maximum experience, not to the maximum. Sitting on the right side of the couch if you really wanted to know. You ask us, I need to know, you know, I like that you put out when we're at, you ask the same thing of us. So there you go.
I actually am afraid of going much higher than 20 on my Roku. I did it
there's
once
a point
or
where
twice.
It's too much for me.
Yeah,
there are some shows where I like to ramp it up though. So
especially
Suwano Music in there.
I have tested it out just to see if my Roku could handle full blast, but yeah, 20 is way too loud for me as it is.
Yeah, I mean they're built to go up that high, not so that you can ramp up everything that high. It's for some things that have low sound and you need to ramp it up. You're not supposed to ramp it up for everything. It will break it if something is too loud. But yeah, you know that.
Yeah.
I'm just telling other people.
I don't go higher than 20. I'm pretty sure it goes up to 64.
A good sound system is essential to me because you miss so much without one. I always watch it alone because none of my friends IRL like anime. I will say that sound does mean a lot for a lot of shows. I mean, there's a lot of... there's more shows than not that music is throwaway. But whenever you get a show that has not just music, sound and ambience and that kind of stuff that just hits, again, prime example, I keep talking about this season, Dangers in My Heart. Literally the emotion is portrayed by the music. So if you don't have the music, you think it's going to noise or something?
No, I was the cracking of the
just staring at me with he's trying waiting to open up his bottle. But no, Dangers in My Heart, like I said before, it's one of those shows where very little is spoken. I mean, there's a lot spoken, but it's mostly in the head of the main character. But so much of the emotion is felt through the music. Like, I feel like a gut punch every now and then with the music just hitting so deep, because the musician that did, you know, A Silent Voice and stuff like that, they know how to be, like, very, very clear, but yet very gut-punching instrumental, and it just works. So it just completely takes the whole show to another level. And so, yeah, that show has to be played with very loud sound. And like I said, Swan on Music. Swan on Music. And Seiyus. I mean, getting that... They do such a great job recording with most anime. A lot of cases, vocal recordings is priority. I mean, yes, you'll have like some shows like, what was it, Koi Kimo, where the male actor for some reason was phoned in. His audio was so crappy. But most of the time you can get so much emotion out of the characters. I mean, even a goofy show like Kamikatsu and having Aoyuki breaking down as our character was like, gosh, Aoyuki, stop. You're beating me up right now. Or, for example, High Card. They had Rie Takahashi in that one, where she was the up-and-coming cadet. Not cadet, but like a police officer. And at some point, she just... There's like havoc happening around her, and she's freaking out. And I was like, oh my gosh, dude, she just nailed this scene so hard. Rie Takahashi just killing it. And of course, here recently with this recent show that we shall not say. She's great. She's absolutely great. So, there you go. Anything to add to that one? Sound itself? Oh, you were talking about cranking up your speakers and breaking them.
Yes.
I look forward to hearing what you guys have to say on this. Thanks, Death Metalhead, for the question. That was some good stuff. Good stuff. Good stuff. Patches even says it's a good question. So there you go. Gringo says, I found out there are three seasons to Ascendance of Bookworm. Only season one shows up on Crunchyroll for me. So where do I find the rest of the season? I think they're on High Dive, weren't they? I thought I bought. Yeah, they're High Dive, because Sentai Filmworks released season one and two as a complete Blu-ray. I think it was originally on Crunchyroll, but I think High Dive stole it. So they should be on High Dive? Question mark? Check High Dive. Check High Dive later on. Also says, okay, Gringo was responding to that one. See, Gringo, bad. I will publicly shame anybody that answers somebody else's questions in the submit questionnaire. Yeah. So shame on Patches for saying great question too, because that's a response as well. Let's see here. Conart says all three seasons got put into one season of Crunchyroll, so there are 36 episodes. Okay, there's the answer to that. TCB says another one. Thoughts on people jumping into anime and feeling intimidated by what's available / feeling left out of the loop, trying to fit into the culture sphere of what's popular or what have you. I mean, there's no shortage of quote unquote gatekeeping in any community. I'm not sure if you're specifically mentioning that, probably not, but I do see there being a bit of intimidation. I mean, we've regularly have somebody pop in the Discord or other areas saying, hey, check out your podcast. I'm new to anime. And this is my introduction into anime itself. I haven't really ran into too many people that are intimidated by it, but I can honestly see it, especially in a season like Winter was. I can imagine if somebody just came into anime and was like, okay, Winter's my first season. I've learned about this whole seasonal thing. So I'm going to check out what's coming up. Everybody's talking about what's the next shows coming up. And so I'll pick my shows. And then they see a list of 66 shows and goes, wait, what? I think there is a fear, and this is a fear in general for most everything. It's not necessarily about newcomers. It's more of an aspect of creating that fatigue in the fact that there's so many shows. And I think the fix to that is obviously that not many people talk about all the shows. I think there's a credit to go with finding a group of people that you enjoy hanging out with and just discuss those shows in general. or finding a group like Otaku Spirit with our Discord where you can just go into an individual channel and just talk about that show and not have to worry about keeping up with all of them. You just have a focal point where you can kind of focus on and discuss with somebody a single show. I mean, that's a good warning to anybody getting into anime is not, don't look at that chart and go, oh, what do I do? Kind of just find your group and enjoy discussing the individual shows. And if it becomes too much, just learn how to know your limits, because you don't want to get burnt out, and two, not everybody has all the time in the world to really watch everything. Just find the stuff that kind of works for you. And I do feel like anime, more than anything else, you can sort of find what works for you, because, I mean, for better or worse, typically things kind of fall into a certain style. Like, if you're a patient person and you like kind of a slow building story, you're gonna like Slice of Life. So if you want something that just, you know, to keep your attention and just relax and enjoy after a work day, you're probably gonna enjoy a shonen with some epic battle sequences from MAPPA or something. But I'm talking a lot. You want to jump in?
I think we discussed this in one of our episodes, but we talked about the idea of make sure you pace yourself. Don't, like Andrew was saying, feel out different genres and different styles of shows and find the things that are going to work for you. Not everything is going to work. Your chase will probably change over time. You probably will mm-hmm. find yourself liking shonen one day, and then a little while later you end up liking, death horror or whatever the heck you want to call that stuff.
We've ran into people that were literally, mm-hmm. they were introduced into it by shonens, like Naruto and stuff like that, and then they got into Slice of Life, and that's all they care about anymore. And it's like, really? What a step from, I was introduced by shonen epic battles, and I literally just fell in love with Slice of Life, because they're so different from each other.
And I mean, I find myself stuck in pretty much the more lighthearted stuff. I kind of tend to avoid the darker stuff, but I did like a lot of the darker stuff at one point. You will find yourself, as long as you keep yourself paced and don't, even if you get tired of it, just take a break. You don't have to completely force yourself to watch, like Andrew said, 66 shows. You will burn yourself out. I mean,
and I mean, that's to that point of what they're asking here is like that fear of being left out, which I think it's logical. I mean, I can totally see that with a lot of people.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of cases where, you know, some people just, they watch a show because they want to be part of the discussion. And we've had that several times in the past where we have, you know, even, you know, disagreements within our own Discord or not. I don't think I've really had too much in the Discord, but we did have quite a bit of it in the forums where you would have somebody that was just literally hate watching. It was like, why are you hate watching this? And their response is, because I want to be part of the discussion. And it's like, but are you adding anything to discussion? Because you sound like you're just not having fun. What? This isn't beneficial in any way to anybody. Why bother? Yeah. And again, just want to be part of the conversation. A lot of people just keep watching, especially shonen shows, going on to 100 episodes, and it's like, well, I've invested this much time, might as well continue it, and again, be part of the discussion. And it's like, I mean, you do you. You do you. But I do agree that it's intimidating, especially with the factor of how much literally comes out, and trying to fit in with any specific group is difficult. But like I said, I think that's where it comes into, find a group of people that you enjoy talking about the shows with, find a community like the Otaku Spirits community, link in the description and at otakuspirit.com, plug, where you could just sort of channel with the specific shows themselves. Or, I mean, there's Miami List, there's Annie List, where you can literally discuss individual episodes as well, which I think is a good route as well to kind of keep in the conversation. So yeah, I do feel not to force yourself to watch everything, and no one to step out of it, because that's the easiest way you can get burnt out. It's just forcing yourself to watch
it. It's much better to take a break than to completely shut down on it. We've talked about it before, but there is this what's considered the life of an anime. I don't know who came up with this time. But there's this theoretical life expectancy of an anime fan, which is 3 to 5 years. We obviously have gone past that, what, 3-4 times over now. So obviously we're
I might not make it to 100 years old, but at least I can say that I live longer than most anime fans. That'll be one achievement I could put on my gravestone. I outlasted everybody else. I watched 5 million shows. Put that on my gravestone.
But supposedly there's this time frame in which you can be an anime fan and then you're out. Either way, I think that it's just what it says on the box. It's a theoretical thing. If you take the time to change with what you're understand, there's so many different types of shows, so many different shows. I still despise the almost criterion lists. There is shows that you should watch, but don't use them as the I have to be introduced to anime and watch the Criterion shows, and then everything else after that is all garbage. Well, yeah, you watched all the good stuff at the beginning. Nothing's going to compare to the good stuff if you've watched all the good stuff at the beginning.
It's so funny because we literally just talked about that like a couple days ago in the Discord, where we have somebody in our community, I don't know if it was Petro or somebody that was literally constantly trying to get a list of shows to watch, and I think he's got a list of 1,000 shows by this point. And I was talking to, we were kind of agreeing with the idea that it's not necessarily the case anymore, that because me and Chris, we did a whole podcast on how to introduce your friends to anime.
Yeah.
And part of that discussion, we made it very clear, don't introduce your friend to the top 100 best shows ever and tell them to watch those, because then when they're done, they're going to think everything else needs to be that caliber, and it's going to be disenchanting to them. Is they're going to be like, where's, this is what I love, and now this. But I don't think that's really, I don't feel that is as relevant anymore, because when we did that, there was like probably 20 to 30 shows a season when we first kind of did that list, and now it really feels like each season there's just at least 5 really good shows, and so it really feels like more so now than ever, we're getting a lot. Yes, they're not to the caliber of things like Kogias and stuff like that, or Steins Gate, but there's a lot of stuff that's up there in quality anymore every single season, where I think back when we talked about that, there was a lot of seasons where you didn't have shows that were like that. But now, like I said, these days, like this season, we have Heavenly Delusion. We had Summertime Render last year. There's a lot of shows that are literally up there as a possibility for being those types of shows. And so I don't really feel, I still think it's important not to set standards, but at the same time, I don't fear it so much anymore. Agree, disagree?
I'm not going to disagree
with you.
Obviously
disagree because you just literally just said that.
I'm going to say I would be careful. I think that there's too high of an expectation of, I mean, my opinion is going to stay firm in the area of anime as an entertainment medium. It is, yes, there is art in it, but it is an entertainment medium first. And
there's going to be a lot of stuff that just literally all it does
is entertainment. It's just entertainment.
They're not all out set to say something, really.
Yeah. And I mean, yes, I'm not going to disagree with you on the idea of there's a lot of good shows that are coming out. I firmly agree with you on that. But to hold out the idea of watch all the good ones at first and then expect everything to be good is a bad idea.
Yeah. Blue Spark says, is there any chance you're going to fix the website in the future regarding the MP3 downloads option for the podcast episodes? Ever since the forums broke down, at least I have, at least that's when the change happened. I've been managing with your XML file, but it's a bit of a hassle to scrolling through to check the new episodes, copying the link and pasting it into an address bar and downloading as save as. I was trying to see if I could find if there was a possibility of making a way that the website itself would automatically pick up the XML file and list it out just like you would on a podcast, but I couldn't find anything that wasn't like a full-on app itself. So I'm planning on looking back into it, but at the same time, it's one of those things of where not many people used it to begin with. So not to say you're not worth it, Blue Spark. It's one of those things of like accessing figuring out where to spend my time in, and that was kind of a low priority of everything, just because, again, not me. It's kind of like when we did the whole schedule thing. It's like, I didn't really get that many hits until you take it down, and then suddenly everybody's like, where is this at? And it's like, well, nobody was using it. It's a difficult thing, but at the same time, I'm just trying it. So if anybody has a solution how to make a site automatically pick up your XML file and list out the contents of it, kind of like a podcast, to do that, let me know. But I don't have an option currently. So
maybe an RSS feed aggregator.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I would assume would work, because it does similar to the RSS feeds.
Yeah.
And I have used RSS feed aggregators, and they work for most of the stuff that I'm looking at it, but I'm not looking at it for MP3s. So take that in consideration. That's maybe a direction I'm trying to point you in, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think that's why most people don't really use the download link. It's because typically with depending on what kind of device they're using, I mean, most people on a phone or something like that, they're just going to use an app that's a podcasting app and it pulls it. But even if they're on a computer, iTunes, literally, if you put the feed into iTunes and you click to download it, and it literally puts it on your computer. Like, iTunes does it for you. So it's like, again, I think that's why we didn't really get much traffic to the actual download pages on the website, because there's so many other options to do. If you are using a PC, like I said, you can use iTunes, and it downloads the audio file before it plays it, and you could just literally go right-click, show in Finder or Explorer, and it shows you the file, and you can just pull it from there. So anyways, Blue Spark also says, and by the way, I don't know if I said this before. Again, if I missed it before, it's been a long time, but Blue Spark, really super happy to have you on the Discord. It took us a while, but we finally got Blue Spark over onto the Discord, and I'm happy to have him there. But anyways, okay, a tiny hassle, but I still want to shoot you a question. I just said thanks for coming to the Discord. Now you want to do that to me. Anyways, I'm unfortunately, the stupid joke, I'm unfortunately also getting canceled downloads pretty frequently, and when trying to get the MP3s from your site, to me, this appears to be a server problem on your end, as my connection is typically rock solid. I very rarely get dropped downloads to other sites, but of course, I can't entirely be sure. I would assume it's probably the server. If there's a lot of people hitting it at one point, it's probably going to have some sort of miss there. And I don't know. I've never been notified of a downage of the server itself, so I can't say for sure. But I am looking at alternative options for places to put the files, because honestly, the server we're putting it on isn't necessarily designated for a podcast or video or anything like that. And I do want to look at possibly archive.org or something like that, where I can put them there and I don't have to worry about paying, like $300 a year just to have that stuff put there. But I don't know how stable archive.org or anything is for a feed. So anything more than that's just going to cost more money. So it's kind of dealing with what I have. But yeah, the YouTube versions of them are always up, so you can use that too. If you don't think this type of question fits the podcast, I'd appreciate a quick answer here instead. There you go. You got it.
I would input something.
Inputting something. Welcome, Blue Spark.
Yeah, welcome back. I was going to throw out, did you look into Spotify's FM thing? Or did you see if that would possibly host?
I know that I've looked at a couple of them where there's actual groups where you literally just it's like YouTube, where you click upload file and you say what the title is and everything, and it puts it in there for you, and it puts it on your server. So that's something I definitely do need, like I said, just to alleviate another income that's dropping out of my pocket every year while I try to get things built up. Esteemed gentlemen, that's Death Metalhead says, welcome to Death Metalhead's second installment of OS Brothers Preference Series. Today we are diving headfirst into another oddly relevant series of questions. As we all know, every otaku tends to be meticulous about their collection, from novels to manga, Blu-rays, sets to figures. We all care about our prized possessions and stow them accordingly. Store them accordingly. That stove too. Our question today follows: how do the two of you organize your collections? This doesn't really apply to figures, as I really think they just arrange them in a way that seems visually appealing. Okay, so that's the first part. I don't have a method. For like Blu-rays and stuff like that, it is technically, I'll keep DVDs and Blu-rays separately just because they're so different in size. I don't want to have like a bunch of like ups and downs from the size up, you know, their vertical size. I typically keep ones that have sleeves together, those that have no sleeve and it's just straight Blu-rays together, all, of course, novels together based on the series itself in order, typically going starting from left to right when in order of them. And again, similarly, it's kind of sticking to the size of themselves. There's often a lot of cases, a lot of publishers will have a similar size to their mangas and light novels, so I'll usually keep them together as well, but that's pretty much it. But yeah, pretty much figures is whatever's aesthetically pleasing or fits. So
I have a bunch of figures in a box. I suck.
And I make sure to organize them in the way that they fit more in one box. Right?
Yes.
Yeah, there you go.
I like my figures. They're pretty.
The focus today on novels, manga, and Blu-rays, do you store them in particular order, alphabetical? There you go. There's that question part there. Do you care simply slide the newest purchase into any open space? That's the most annoying thing, especially for novels and manga, because like you'll fit them in the shelf, and then the next volume will come in the next day, and then you have to like scoot everything down and take something out of the shelf in order for it to fit. Most cases, what I'll do is when I get the next volume, I'll put it on top of it. So they're all stacked sideways, obviously, and then I'll put the next one on top of it horizontally. And then when I get probably another one, then I'll reorganize everything. I'll shift everything down and fit it in there. So, but yeah, that's the worst. That is the absolute worst, is when you get another one that fits in a certain area, you have to shift everything down. So
I'd probably be a lot more annoyed if my figures were broken or something. I'm not good at taking care of that stuff. I really suck at that kind of junk. Mm-hmm. So I am not meticulous like Andrew on that.
He bugs the hell out of me with his dust. Anyways. Yeah, I like when he had that shelf in the other room, and it was literally like everything was just set sideways up there. They weren't stacked in any, like, there weren't like uniform or anything. He just literally just like, here's the No Game My Life. He literally just sets them flat sideways and just sticks them up on the shelf. I'm like, okay. Don't get involved. It's great.
I like them. I'm not that crazy about it. I don't know how to explain it. It doesn't have that kind of, I like them. I like that I have them, but they're figures. I know I
wow.
suck. I am the worst.
Wow. Like, I feel like he's criticizing all the collectors.
No, I'm actually criticizing myself. I wish I had that drive, but I don't. I really don't.
Death Metal Head says, I personally don't organize my manga and novels in any particular order way on my shelf. My only
So are
real
you
criteria.
Are you like me? Are you like me? Do I have somebody who's similar to me who likes to collect them but don't really care?
My only criteria for shelving books is the height of the book itself. So yeah, you like that form uniformity across it. I try to keep similar sized books next to each other because I think it looks better for Blu-rays. I currently have them alphabetical order, but consider trying to sort them in studio once I get more of them.
Now I will. Now I will say this.
I mean, that kind of works, but for it. Like, I have, like, all the Aniplex ones from, like, Shaft with, like, the Monogatari series and stuff together, but that's mainly because they're the same type of box from Aniplex, but that's a feat. The only ones I have in alphabetical order is the plain Blu-ray jewels. I have those in alphabetical. I don't know why. Like, everything else is not in alphabetical, but that, for some reason, I keep in alphabetical order. It makes no sense.
Now, I will say this. There is one thing about Andrew's collection that drives me nuts. He doesn't have all the same group in the same shelf.
The same group in the same shelf.
Right.
What group?
Like, all of them. Well, like, group? You have Rim from ReZero.
Oh,
then
you have
this,
the jewels.
That I do when I do on my...
It's
when
size.
I did my shelf. Yeah, yours is fairly aesthetically pleasing. But that is kind of one thing that I did, and I did bump into that every once in a while. Even in my stuff, is sometimes I would have all of the Ken Colley girls in one shelf, and I would either have too many of one or not enough of one, and so I'd have to fit something in that one little spot right there, And this one wouldn't have a spot, and it would drive me crazy. That is my ticky thing for whatever reason.
He didn't have them all together. Because I don't think he had the Dog Days girls together.
Yes, they were.
They were separate. And then he had like a smattering of stuff just like laid out in there. Like the kite for the girl from Gargantua was like down on the bottom shelf. It was weird.
Because it didn't...
it didn't fit! Bingo! You almost said it! You kind of...
I did not say I wasn't disagreeing with you on the fitting
there's also,
thing.
There's also a priority based on nudity. Is that a way to put it? Nudity? Newestness? And appreciating when something is given to me, like a certain girl from Fire Force I put up at the top there so everybody know. Can see it. Anyways. That concludes today's installment of OS Brothers Preference Series. I know these kind of questions may seem mundane. I guess it can't really say this today is because we literally did two of them. But I always find it fascinating to learn how other people do things may seem like second nature to most of us. That is true.
We all found out that Chris sucks at figure collecting. That's all we found out of this one.
The more you know, blum, 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 blum. But yeah. No, it's kind of funny because communicating with or talking with Web Gaming, he got me to start doing Goodreads to track all of my novels and mangas. And I'm like, I hate that you made me do this because it took forever to go through and scan each one of their Spark codes and put them into this stupid app. And I'm like, I don't even know why I did that. So if anybody ever cares to know what novels and mangas I have, I have a Goodreads, I guess. Eventually, when I start reading them more, I'll actually start listing them out as finished. I think I've been keeping up with it, so. Midas says, everyone got their own biases, whether they want to admit it or not. Having biases preferences doesn't mean you're not open to different types of shows. Dropping some truth bombs. What are some of your favorite preferences, likes for anime in general? What's some of your top production preference likes? I think we've already talked about that. It's pretty much
harems and KyoAni.
Oh, right. Yeah. Pretty much just Kyoto Animation visually anyways. Production.
And I really like isekais, obviously.
Is that like all encompassing? Because he does character preferences, production preferences, and...
Character preferences. I like...
preferences and likes of narrated themes and other stuff.
I like kuderes and donderes. That's my preference as far as character types.
I'm obviously Tsundere. Even though I hated Tsundere at first, I've grown to like Tsundere. Not that I like just stereotypical Tsundere, but I like ones that are done well, that have kind of evolved
more depth,
the formula of it. Obviously, bare bones archetypes are typically boring, but in some cases they can be charming in a way, but it's better when they're obviously done better. I mean, that's the argument that we constantly make whenever we're talking about Mushoku Tensei, is they're... Yes, technically starting off, he kind of plays with the idea of different archetypes, but he quickly breaks them. He does just kind of throws them out the window. And even Rudeus himself acknowledges that they're kind of this archetype, but then they end up not being that. So, yeah. But no, yeah, production and preference and stuff like that. Like I said, Kyoto Animation, I like affordable stuff, even though they do typically get stuck in shonens, just like MAPPA gets typically stuck in shonens. I like it when they kind of branch out, do other stuff. Still think that both those studios are some of the worst CGI. Although Ufotable does a really good job of hiding environmental CGI, they still suck at like fish, dragon, stone dragons, and blobs and skeletons. They're terrible at those things for some reason. They just can't seem to pull those off. But yeah, characters like I said, Tsundere's I like. Nurturing character, big sister characters I love to death. I love big sister characters. Like the Loli characters, like the Tsundere characters.
I love my Emotos.
Good mama just, characters just... are always great as well, which are obviously very... Man, my home hero, that mom is so great. That mom is so great. She's literally going to go down as one of the best moms in anime. God, she's a mom. She's absolutely a mom. She's like the shining
beacon
of hope for that show.
I really liked Shinigami's dad a couple weeks ago.
Shinigami's dad.
Yes. With the marinated eggs. Oh, Clues
for Friend, yeah.
Yeah. Marinated eggs was an absolute fantastic joyful scene. I really, really loved it.
Yeah. Smiles that must be protected and all that good stuff.
Yep.
What's your preferences likes when it comes to narrative themes and other stuff? I'm all over the place. I don't really have a preference. I like to kind of dabble in everything. I think that's kind of one of the nice things about what I do and how much kind of comes out every season is you're always going to find something that does something completely different. So,
yeah, I've grown past a lot of that. If you had asked me a couple years ago, I would have said drama by far.
Yeah. I mean, that was my problem when we were early in the podcast. I just hated Moe stuff. I was tired of horror. It was all about that. Yeah.
But yeah.
That wasn't something that I jumped into. It's just I got tired of it really quickly. And so when we were really kind of getting back into it, I was very picky about what I wanted to get back into.
But yeah, as far as a narrative thing that it probably slice of life. If that's a narrative, I mean, I guess that.
But no, I mean, putting aside everything else, like what I mentioned earlier, I do appreciate when shows really kind of bend your mind. When they try to do something different, they're obviously trying to kind of trick you, shake the mold up. Those are always good, so. Examples in picture below, if not clear what I mean from questions, left production, middle characters, right other. You made a collage, or is this like a thing that people were doing on social media at some point? That I completely miss because I'm good at missing that kind of stuff. You got Monogatari, not Monogatari series, the Monogatari. K-On. JoJo's. JoJo's. I'm joking. Got a lot of older shows in here. Jeez, good stuff. Cardcaptor Sakura. Zetsubou Sensei. Well, he's got Wolf Children in here. He likes Wolf Children.
Who that was.
Magical Circle Guru Guru. Magical Circle Guru Guru. Shout out. Bocchi the Rock, obviously. Everybody loves Bocchi the Rock. Millennium Actress. Still my watch of shame is Millennium Actress. Akiba Sailor Uniform. Good stuff. Good stuff. Void Dragon says there is a serious question that I want to get your opinion on. What are your thoughts on ambiguity or show don't tell? I ask because in some of your videos you seem to me to take issue with things not being clearly started, or I'm guessing stated or outright confirmed. There's obviously going to be different limits depending on the show itself. In a lot of cases, you can have a show that's not working for you, that it sticks out more than shows that are. Because there's, the best way that I can describe it, there's some cases where I'll watch a show, like, for example, it's a really good example because it's so fresh in my mind, I'm digging so far into it. Mushoku Tensei: Jobless Reincarnation. I always give the benefit of the doubt to the writer because they have shown to me that if I wait, this will be answered. Whereas there's a lot of shows where it's not working for me because I personally have felt like they have not delivered on things enough that I can't trust them. The complete opposite example is something like Sunny Boy, which I'm guessing maybe possibly the trigger, because I've stated before that I wasn't a huge fan of Sunny Boy. Even though I really enjoyed it throughout its airing, at some point late in its airing, I realized it wasn't going to answer anything. At some point, even though I had the hope the writer was going to answer things, at some point realized they're not going to answer anything. And I do believe there is a give and take on what you enjoy despite not having answers because there's enough to kind of draw from versus cases where you're not enjoying it and you just feel like you're being strung along for the sake of the writer to go, well, what did it make you feel? What do you think this means? And at some point you're thinking you're just literally throwing stuff on the screen and saying, you figure it out. Like, you didn't have a narrative here or a focus. And yes, people can draw conclusions from Sunny Boy. It's fine. But me personally, I felt kind of like I didn't get enough answered when it should have answered something.
Just to throw it out there. Okay, we are a couple of people who actually went through and sat through Lost. Okay. So we're inherently kind of distrustful of authors that don't prove themselves worthy of our time. So,
is that literally like we're holding up the teddy bear and saying where dad hit you and you're
where
like,
did dad hit me
right here that Lost emblem sized or shaped bruise right there
freaking smoke monster. It's one of those things that
I know what triggered this. It was probably the farming life in another world. And maybe you might have missed that, or maybe I mentioned this later on and explained it, and you may have heard that whole thing, but if you missed it, I explained it in the fact that the show itself didn't say it, or show it, or confirm it, and the source material did. So the problem there is that they literally removed it. So I have a right to be angry because they literally scrubbed it out of the show and they didn't need to.
I personally am ambiguity is one of those things for me that does kind of irk me to a point. If I feel like I have a rightful expectation to have that answer before the end of the season, then I expect it to be answered. Period.
Yeah.
If I don't get it answered by the end of the season, I'm going to be mad. If I fully expect that it is a show that is going to imply to me that it's going to be a long-standing series, that the answer to that question should be a hook long time out. It's kind of the, there's a term, Chekhov's gun or some weird name person, that if you see the gun in the first episode, it is fully expected that it will be revealed at some point and used by the end of the show or something like that. Or the third episode or something. I don't know. It's this directorial rule of thumb or something like that.
Don't show something unless you're going to use it.
Yeah. Don't show it unless you're going to use it. And that is almost the exact opposite to the ambiguity. I don't know why I can't say that word.
I literally do it every Mashuka Monday. You people watch my blooper at the end of Mashuka Monday. It's like suddenly out of nowhere, there's just this one word.
This one
that
word.
I've literally used my entire life millions of times, but suddenly for some reason, it will not work in this sentence. My brain's like, no, it's not going there. No, no. Say it 15 more times. You're still going to say it wrong.
But there is a, like I said, Lost is the perfect example of why I absolutely despise that kind of system to a point, because I literally sat through, 10 or 5 seasons and got literally nothing at the end of that entire journey. Yes, we had a lot of fun speculating the entire time we were watching that show, but at the end, we didn't get anything. It was a big... Never mind. But anyway, shows... I don't necessarily get mad at it if it's not there, but at the same time, there is a expectation sometimes that you feel like you should have this answered and it should be answered quicker than it actually is, and then you have this cliffhanger. Some shows are obvious, they're manga bait, and that's fine. We got past that a long time ago. Sometimes there is other shows where it should be clearly stated within that time frame, and those are the ones that are more frustrating, and everybody has different tolerances of it. I'm probably a bit more lenient than Andrew is. Andrew has his own tolerance levels. I have my own tolerance level.
And again, I fully admit that it's a lot of cases where it's depending on the show itself. Like if the show is working for you, you're in often cases going to either draw your own conclusions, be willing to draw your own conclusions, or just enjoy it, even if it doesn't tell you exactly what you're doing, because you're still enjoying the show. Whereas in a lot of cases, if you're not enjoying the show and you're seeing that it's not saying enough and it's skipping things or whatever, it's going to frustrate you a little bit. And I do believe there's a huge difference between the idea of ambiguity and show don't tell. I love show don't tell. I think it's fantastic. Again, I mentioned again this episode, Danger to My Heart. It's literally a show that is mostly show don't tell in the from Yamada's perspective. Yamada is a show don't tell character for the most part. I mean, she's more vocal now than she was at the very beginning of the show, but a lot of her storytelling is based on her actions. In this recent episode, prime example, there's this whole very pinnacle scene in the library where these people walk up to the door of the library, and you barely, you don't even see her face in the shot.
but you can subtly see her shoulder shift to the right. So you know she's seen them. And that's a very important thing to take note of based on what happens after that. It's a show, don't tell aspect. It doesn't show you to, it doesn't give her inner thoughts or anything like that. And there's a lot of other stuff in that regard, but that's just one example of it. Whereas, again, like ambiguity and the idea of just sort of, I guess, leaving it to your own devices or just not having it in there bugs me. I think that's a completely different aspect. And again, I think a lot of that relies on whether you're enjoying all the other aspects of it or not. And I mean, that was a case with, there's another problem. It might be, there's like a couple of them. Maybe Winter was a season like that. Cause I think I had maybe like two shows where I was frustrated because something wasn't really stated. Technically Magical Revolution in Winter had that same problem with its later episode, which yes, it corrected it and it explained it. But that was a case where I was frustrated about that episode because it didn't properly say what was bothering the main character. And everybody said, you're not getting it. It's saying it based on this, it's saying it. And literally what happened the next episode, she said what was the matter. And it was nothing what everybody else said because it was ambiguous and it didn't say what was the problem. Everybody drew their own conclusions. But there's an example right there where people are okay with it because they drew their own conclusions. Whereas I felt it did not answer it. And I was technically confirmed by the fact, and my thought process was confirmed the next episode, and the idea that it says what it was, and it was something we never really had talked about before. So there again, it varies for different people, but I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing or a good thing, depending on what you view for them. But sometimes it just works and sometimes it doesn't.
Yeah, we're talking about like four different writing tools, and yeah. It ambiguous is probably one of the hardest ones to kind of use. Show don't tell is a difficult one to do as well, because you're literally, ambiguity is using your readers or your watchers' imagination to tell the story. Show don't tell is using the director's. One will not neither of them will translate well because there is a
expectation.
Yes. It's also in there's a personality that is involved in both of those. Like in Show Don't Tell, it's the director or the writer that it's their inference that this is happening. Ambiguity is the receiver or the watcher, it's their imagination that is telling the story. Both cases, there's flawed personality involved in both of those, because either one of them can be misinterpreted in some way, shape, or form. The other ones that I had mentioned, like Chekhov's gun or the cliffhangers or something like that, all those things are all part and parcel to these different types of tools that are being used. And each one has its strengths and has its weaknesses.
Cross Ange was ambiguous.
Poor Cross Ange.
Cross Ange was ambiguous. Void Dragon, thanks for the question. Havoc says, question. Well, I would hope so. I think I started categorizing for the podcast or the videos too. So anyways, I'm very slowly getting my normie friend into anime. How dare you? And it got me to thinking, what do you find are the easiest and hardest genres of anime to recommend to normies? Slice of life is the hardest.
I would say horror is
hentai. Sorry, hentai is the hardest to sell to normies. I would probably say slice of life easy.
Literally, somebody,
because at least with horror, people that you know, if you know somebody's into horror flicks, you'd like, yeah, here, check out this brutal show, and they're gonna love it.
No, I would say no, mostly because I know that they're, horror in the Western sense is very different than horror in the Japanese sense. So it's not.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
I tried to make, I wanted to make a suggestion, and then I realized very quickly it's not the same. So although I had set this person up to accept it, I was very, very aware that I was not in a good place to be able to.
Well, yeah, it's different, different for each person, for sure. Yeah. I mean, even if it didn't work for that person, I think it could work for somebody else. Because, I mean, we've had people that popped in and it says, hey, I like this and I'm new to anime. What should I watch? And suggest shows, and it seemed to work out for them. But no, I do agree that, well, for one, there's not much horror anime out there. If you really do break it down, it seems like horror is just not a television friendly thing in Japan or something. And they're just not that readily accepted. And yes, I do agree that Western is more reliant on jump scares, whereas Japan is more atmospheric and, I guess, very tension based and thought provoking horror. Like it's more like Junji Ito is very thought provoking horror and very unsettling horror, but it's not really jump out in front of your, because it's a manga. You're not going to flip the panels and go, it jumped out of the manga, unless they have like a pop up book and you just didn't know it when you flip the pages and suddenly this thing comes out of it.
Which I could totally see. I could totally see him doing that.
That'd be totally cool.
All the Japanese prank shows you've ever seen, I could totally see them doing a prank thing like that.
Yeah. But no, to be serious, like I said before, slice of life, I think, is one of the more biggest struggles, because it seems like for most quote unquote normies, it's boring. And I think it's a lot. And there's also an aspect of it not relating to a normie. Like if a person that's a quote unquote normie that's getting into anime, the biggest struggle overall for anime is the culture shock. It is these people live differently. They see things differently. They react to each other differently. Their mannerisms are kind of weird. There's a lot of cultural stuff that's in Japan that just doesn't seem to be normal for the Western audience. And so what Slice of Life is literally doing is it's literally taking the viewer, shoving them into Japan and saying, walk down the street. And they're just going, okay. And they start walking down the street and they're like, okay, things are different. This is weird. And then suddenly two characters pop up and they're not acting like kids would in the West. And there's a lot of things that just doesn't connect. And I think over time, as you really experience, you know, the Japanese culture / anime or whatever, which, yes, I'm going to put the caveat there that anime is not Japan, just like Popeye is not the United States. But there's a lot of culture aspects in there. And I think the better wrote slice of lives are the ones that feel actually natural and not weird and not normal. But there's going to be a lot of those little things and references and stuff and how they act that's going to be different than what we kind of expect. And since it's slow at the same time, it's a lot harder for people to kind of stomach. So, and then I think part of that really does reflect in when you see the general population of anime fans don't even watch Slice of Life. So if even anime fans aren't watching it, it gives me an indication that normies wouldn't either or even enjoy it. So, yeah.
Easiest is probably Shonen,
but it's
you ask anybody.
Easiest, yeah.
If they've watched, when they say, "Oh, I watch anime," and you go, "What anime have you watched?" The first thing that everybody says is something like Naruto, Dragon Ball Z, or something like that. So obviously, most normies can handle Naruto and Dragon Ball Z and stuff.
And
like that.
That's a funny thing, because it's easy to say that, but I would say that if it's anybody above their teens, it would be probably harder to introduce them into a shonen. Whereas I think when you get to older age, it's going to be a little more difficult to kind of suggest a particular show. And that's when we get into probably for normies in adulthood, it starts to lean to things that are maybe more sci-fi or psychological stuff like that, that would probably pique somebody's interest. Probably more male audience than female audience, but there's probably enough female audience out there that would enjoy a nice mind bender type of show. Because I don't think for an adult going, hey, check out, you know, hey, 35 year old coworker, go watch Naruto. That's a good way to get an anime. They're going to be like, that show was so juvenile. I hated it. It's a little harder for somebody to kind of jump right into a shonen when they're a little bit older, I think. So, my opinion. But, yeah. Was that it? No, there was another part of it. Easy recommendation for me would be a shonen where I find a comedy anime being harder. Oh, yeah. Comedies. Woo! Comedy's a very difficult one. I agree, because there's a lot of cultural references in there that you're going to completely miss.
I would agree, too, because most, like Andrew's saying, that goes into that culture shock thing of if you don't understand a lot of the context of the joke,
I think some work like Konosuba, where it's more general comedy and it's just more self-deprecating.
Slapstick is different. And a lot of
and it's very fantasy RPG-ish. So if you have a friend that enjoys JRPs or fantasy, they enjoy it.
If you understand the context of the comedy, it will work. If you don't understand the context, I mean, that's why
comedy you have to know your friend to suggest, I guess, is the best way to put it.
Yeah, cool-headed.
If you know your friend likes, college comedy humor, stuff like that, you'd be like, yeah, check out freaking Prison School or something like that. If somebody has dabbled in a lot of JRPGs back in the day, like they loved Dragon Quest and stuff like that, be like, yeah, watch Magical Circle Guru Guru, and they're probably gonna get a lot of references there.
What was the one where the guy was the second in command of hell? Cool-headed Hazuki?
Mm-hmm.
And that one is massively makes massive references to
that's just like
culture, and it is one of the
same way.
Otaku Elf is very similar, yes. Andrew even mentioned what while we were doing the preview of it, and he's mentioned one of the war generals, and I recognized the name. I mean, and I knew of him and what his general role in the war was. But that I ended up learning something that I didn't know about that person. So it was interesting to see that. And but when somebody else would be like, well, who is that? However, Japanese, they take it for granted that they know these characters. They are massive. They're like the Abraham Lincoln of Japan. So, yeah, of course, they know who it is.
Shoot, was it Nobunaga the dog? Where the dog got turned into Nobunaga, and then all of his generals started getting turned into dogs, and it was like, there's so many references. I, like I said, even when I did the review of it, I'm like, I don't think I reviewed it. I just did first impressions. I'm like, fully admit, there's a lot of references here I don't get, so it's just not going to work for me. It's just plain and simple. But if you're super into that kind of culture and that history, definitely check it out. I mean, I'm into the history and stuff like that. It's just getting everything is... it would take a lot of studying. I mean, if you did it as a major or something like that, it would probably work out. But
this is why we wish that Nobunaga Concerto had finished, then we would have seen a lot of those and we would have known all that.
It's a good show. Havoc concludes with keep up the great work, gang. Thank you so much, Havoc. Mr. Crisps answering the question, naughty Mr. Crisps. Sabanasu says, I wonder if Chris finished Bocchi the Rock.
We'll be going back to that very soon.
Oh my gosh. Moving
on. We got stuck on this season. Guys, remember, I had an entire season that I had a very hard time keeping up with.
Yeah, it was a blackout.
There's a big, massive blur for 6 months, okay? I don't know what happened during that time, but things happened.
Massive segment where he just completely blacked out because he didn't have any regular injection of Moe. Godako says, "What's the thanks?"
Did I miss two seasons? Calling him out.
I mean, that was in fall, so
holy crap!
Yeah, I think you started your new schedule halfway through fall, so because you were like wrapping up a few shows. Yeah. Anyways, Godako says, "What's the long-running shonen franchise you want to get into most? Spin-off shows like Boruto and Yu-Gi-Oh! Go Rush are part." Also, when will the fairy cast return?
I need to finish.
It's One Piece, obviously. I think that's about the only one that I would really care about at this point. I kind of do want to Hunter x Hunter.
You want to watch One Piece?
Yes. I mean, it's the only one that I haven't watched, really, that I eventually will want to get into.
I wasn't even going for One Piece, but okay.
What else is there?
I do want to watch Hunter x Hunter. That one is one that I do kind of really want to watch.
But that'll never finish. That's the only thing that I don't want to get into Hunter x Hunter for is because I don't think it'll ever finish.
You think so?
The manga's not done.
I'm convinced that One Piece
and sick.
I'm convinced One Piece is never going to end.
That is true.
There are still episodes of that show coming out.
I think he's planned it.
He says so. Yeah, but he has not finished.
But he's getting up there in age. I think he's, but I think he has a plan to finish it. Whereas I think with Hunter x Hunter, he's like, literally the manga's not done, and he tries to start it back up, and then he goes on hiatus again. He's not doing well. And I wish, I hope that he gets the best or gets better, but still.
But I am going to finish Fairy Tail at some point. That's going to happen. Bleach, I'm obviously going to finish. I do want to get back to Boruto. I have finished Naruto. I do want to get into Boruto. I do kind of like the idea of a second generation of those characters. So I am interested Believe it. In it. My next on my list would, like I said, would be Hunter x Hunter. I do kind of want, I take that back. Dragon Ball is going to come back before then. I'm going to go through all the supers at some point. Then I will go to Hunter x Hunter and probably at that point it would be the one with the redhead girl. What's that show?
Magi?
Oh, no. Magi I technically already finished. I didn't watch Sinbad, but Magi
Slayers?
No, the one with the guy, with the two guys and the girl,
Orient?
No.
I'm just going to keep naming off a bunch of shows.
It's the one that's the parody of the shonens.
Oh, you're talking about Gintama? That's
Gintama.
Not technically a shonen. That's a parody.
Yeah, I know.
Comedy parody. I mean, it is a long-running typically shonen aimed series, but does it even have a shonen genre tag? I wonder.
I think so. I mean, I've always considered it. It's the anti-shonen shonen, so.
But I mean, that's like, yeah, Gintama, if you want to put that into that category, maybe, yeah, probably more than One Piece, but again, I don't really have many shonens that I haven't either dabbled in or care to continue, so it's, I mean, like I said, Hunter x Hunter is the only one, and that one I'm even hesitant just because I don't think it's ever going to finish, and I don't know if I want to get into it because of that, so. They list it as no shonen, oh, there's demographic shonen.
But yeah, that's I mean, most all of them, One Piece is on the bottom of my list only because of how long it is. It's not
Well, even with One Piece, like,
I have started.
I'll do manga than the show because there's way too much filler from what I understand, so.
Yeah, I have started One Piece. So technically I am 16, 17 episodes into it. I have started it.
There you go. One Piece fan right here.
That's me. One Piece all the way.
Godaka also says, one last question for Jabba's reincarnation. What type of beast person do you think Sylphie's mom was? I don't know that it was ever mentioned in the light novel, so I'll say puppy girl. I'll just say puppy girl. I don't know. There you go.
I am very confused, and I have finished the show. So either I'm doing a massive spoiler by saying that. So I don't know.
Confused.
I'm very confused.
Yoshin says, "What type of reason? What was your reason for starting Otaku Spirit? Found it way, way back, and love listening to the old cast. And we have not mentioned it in any of the casts you've listened to. We've stated several times,
Yuki." Hey, Yuki, you're snoring super loud.
She is, like, way out now.
Yuki! She's getting louder. Yuki!
Huh? But no, we've said it several times before that it's, like, a aspect of... The way that I sort of described it before was I used to watch Leo Laporte a lot, or listen to him a lot, and the one thing he kind of pointed out a lot that kind of hit me at some point was if you see a necessity for something... If you think that there should be something in some sort of media or podcast or whatever, if you see there's an empty spot and you're kind of upset that there's nobody that does this, do it. And that was kind of coupled with the fact that I think early on when we first got into doing the podcast was there was a severe lack of people that were positive in the sphere. Because especially back when we first started the podcast, it's toned down lately. I think people kind of got tired of it. There's still most every podcast and any tuber and stuff, they made their content on bashing things. Everything in the anime sucks. It's all the same thing. The anime's dying. Let's make fun of the show. Okay, we're watching this show. What do you think about it? It's terrible. All anime is terrible. Nothing. Everything's the same thing. And so we're like, okay, well, let's be the positive voice in the sphere and talk about it in a positive light. So we still bash stuff. We still have things we don't like, but it's not our focus. It's not our content. We don't make our enjoyment out of hating things. So, and yeah, we'll slip up, but I think that's the focus, and I think we've done it pretty well.
Yeah. Yeah. Done it for what, 12 years now?
Well, yeah, probably a little over that. I don't know. It's been a while since I've looked at the number. I think it was back in like 2010 was when our first podcast we ever recorded. But then we were doing it before then with gaming, so.
Yeah, we did gaming. Yeah, and that's a lot of it is we had done two or three podcasts before this, but it never really quite melded together, and then we just sat there one day and we said,
focus on this.
Let's focus on this. And that's what we did. And we went from it from there, and that is how we got 12 years into it.
The most important question this mailbag episode has finally been asked. Death Metalhead says, what the hell is a ribbon pregnancy? Please explain yourselves.
Didn't we put a picture afterwards to help him out a little bit?
I don't know. I think I've posted a few times in Discord the ribbon pregnancy thing.
It is a reference.
No. Hold on.
Okay.
This is sort of sad that we have to explain this, honestly. Well, there is some people who have ribbons on their heads. It's a fashion statement. A lot of people like that. But there's some cases where some people have been sort of cursed that the one that will essentially give them a child will be the one that will touch that ribbon. And thus, once it's touched, preggers. But yes, go ahead, Chris.
It's an extreme version of kissing it equals pregnancy.
Pretty much is. You ever have people? If you have not been watching anime very long, if you've never had a show where literally the girl thinks they're pregnant because they kissed, it happened in ReZero here recently too, and was like, really, we're still doing this? This is still a thing that they think that a kiss is equal preggers? But no, it was Big Order. Was Big a show. Order. It was the writer of Future Diaries was doing a new show. So we were obviously pretty hyped about that show. It felt very similar. But yeah, at some point there is a girl on the show who claims ribbons. That the one that was basically, it was like ordained that there was a prophecy that the one that would touch her ribbon would be the father of her child.
And we're not going to continue after that. We're not going to continue after that. It happened. That's all there is to be done.
She tripped. And he tried to catch her. And as you do, when you're hanging out with a ribbon girl, you would grab the ribbon and not just try to, you know, support her any other way. You just grab the ribbon.
It just stop, Andrew. We don't need to finish after that. It was cute. Ka-plump. Let's be done.
Just ka-plump.
It's just, let's be done with it.
It was great. As much as I give a crap about that show, that was beautifully animated because it literally like it's that whole like you know the bouncing rabbit by the ears thing and it just this thing falls down
here. Let's stop. We don't need to finish the joke. If you want to know the end of the joke, go and look it up. That's all that we need to do.
They literally put it all in there. So Seismic says, oh my sweet summer child. Then we have Patrick meme pictures. Oh no, Vayon. Oh, I'm gonna butcher this. I'm sorry. Vione, I'm guessing is how it's pronounced, says, is mayonnaise an instrument? Yes. Are you actually thinking about this? It's just yes.
Depends on the situation.
I mean, you can just empty it out and drum the top of it. I mean, are we going in some weird direction with this? Are we just going some weird direction with this? Oh, gosh. It's like Ellen Leese in the recent chapter. She's like, you just stick the fingers in the nose or something like that. Oh, so that's what direction you're going. Okay. Forestick Man says, a few questions regarding the podcast. What drives you to keep doing the podcast every week? Without the podcast, I'm sure you guys would have more time to do other things.
I could be playing a lot more video games, yes.
Yeah, yeah. Cutting like 2 hours. No, I will... I will say, like, between me and Chris, depending on who does the outline, which I've taken on to myself a lot recently, just because I want to give Chris kind of the flexibility he needs. I mean, with the prep, especially when we get into things like music podcast episodes and previews, it's a lot of pre-setup. It ends up kind of turning into like a, I don't know, 5 to 6 hour ordeal in a week. But I think
it's okay though, Andrew. There is I have good news. I have one that I'm cooking up in my head.
Oh, great. Here's an outline Andrew has to fix. Chris out the dreaded Chris outlines that we have not heard of in a while. Yeah, I mean there's
this one won't be bad.
It's there is a side of me that is like, yeah, should we I stop doing the podcast and just focus on the YouTube. Obviously the podcast as it is now is not really generating it's not generating revenue. Now, there is a lot of people that support us on Patreon because of the podcast, and the Patreon is still technically a good portion of what is sort of keeping this going. So I do want to keep supporting. I still want to keep doing it for those people as well. But the main driving force, and it's always been the main driving force, is this is something to do with my brother. We've had so much fun doing it. We've been doing it for 12 years. We've been trying to pretty much keep to a week-by-week schedule for... Yes, that 13, 15 years.
Yeah.
So I don't really necessarily want to stop doing it at this point, and we've been trying to keep that schedule going.
It would be,
even though we had struggles at times, I still try to keep up things every single week.
Yeah, it would be almost weird at this point to stop.
Yeah.
Honestly.
There's an empty gap in my life. What happened? We stopped doing the podcast, Chris. No, you know, doing something with my brother, which was initially, I think, one of the early driving forces for me was the fact that doing something with my brother. Me and Chris have never really got along for quite a chunk of our young lives. And so anime bringing us together was a huge thing for me. And so having the podcast to do something with my brother was really great. Would love the day that we could bring our other brother into it. more so something that can happen in probably a couple of years than ever. It's a lot of fun to doing this with him. Secondly, like I said, it is the community that we grew. I don't think the YouTube would have been as successful early on as it has been without the support of those that transitioned from the podcast to support in there as well, or at least looking for other content. They're not sick of hearing me when I typically talk way too much in the podcast. It's the support. It's those that back us up. All that stuff. It is what it is. So, hopefully, one of these days, I'm hoping that as the YouTube grows, it seemingly has been beneficial to getting people contacting for some sort of possible sponsorships in the future. And I would hope that eventually I can transition that back to the podcast as well. But I don't know. I don't think there's ever going to be a time where I don't do it. And plus, with how the podcasts work, they technically easily transition to the YouTube. And there's a few of the podcasts that we've done on the YouTube channel that actually did very well. It's typically like previews and stuff like that or first impressions, but they do well. So, but no, they're not like the best on the channel itself, but it is. What have you learned over the years doing podcasts? Pick up any skills? Editing audio, even though I'm not the best at it, I had to learn how to edit audio. I had to learn audio waves and how to kill noise. I had to distance from the face, the microphones itself, gain and lows and highs and mids and all that kind of stuff. Technically learn how to do podcast feeds and XML files, all that kind of stuff. So I don't really think too much outside of that. I mean, speaking, obviously.
Yeah, I was going to say technically public speaking, I'm a lot more outgoing than I used to be.
I mean, I shocked my coworkers at my last job when we had this big meeting at our corporate office. Well, the company that bought us out, and we went to meet at the corporate office, and they had this whole little thing, kind of, you know, exercises to have everybody meet each other and kind of break the ice for the entire department. And they had this whole thing where we grouped up and then one person had to be a speaker and I'm like, I'll do it. And I went up there and I started talking to everybody. And later on, my coworker was like, dude, you did that so good. I didn't know you were good at speaking in front of people. I'm like, I talk too much every week on a podcast. I'm good at talking. But to that effect, that sort of crippled me as I went into the YouTube, because what was my early videos on YouTube was literally me with my face stuck in the microphone. And it didn't, the reason that it didn't work, affect me on a stage was because I was talking out to people. And so I was moving around. But like with the YouTube, it was like I still had the mic in front of me. So my instincts was just to get that face in there. Get that. Because for those who don't know, whenever you're talking on podcasts, it's like you're literally trying to vocalize your inflections into the microphone directly. Whereas on YouTube, you're trying to entertain visually with the audio, so you have to move. And so that was like an after effect of doing the podcast for so long that it sort of messed up my early YouTube videos that I kind of want to take down at this point. Because every now and then I'll catch a glimpse of it, or somebody will mention something in an early video and I go click on it and I'm like, oh gosh, it's so terrible. Like, I mean, it is something to say that if you look at your old videos and you see there's a significant difference, you know you're getting better. So that is a good thing. So I'm trying to focus on every year, or not every year, but like at least every couple months to look back a couple months earlier to look at how you've improved. So anyways, anything you've learned?
Just the becoming more outgoing, for sure.
Yeah, I think speech patterns and stuff is important too. I literally was about to say I've learned to not say ums, and I literally just got an in there. I still fail, but I really try not to say ums.
I noticed hate ums. Me doing this a while now has made me more outgoing, but it also has brought the fact, like we had mentioned last week, I want to say that we were talking about the idea that I've noticed that I have a speech impediment that I never realized I had.
Oh yeah. It makes you very hyper aware of your mess ups.
Oh, absolutely. And that is for sure. I mean, I got a kick out of the fact that when we first started, we tried to re-record one time and we said never again. So every
podcast, it's never natural after that.
It isn't. And we have literally done, I want to say every podcast that is on our feed has been as live as you can get it. Yes, Andrew does go through and does minor editing, especially probably a lot of it from me because of all my ums. But literally all of them are pretty much all live. You are getting our raw opinions all the way across.
More so now than ever, because like with the question that was asked a minute ago with this idea of why don't you stop doing, you probably have time to do other things. It's like I have technically cut down a lot on my edits. I'm not sure if it's something that's going to cross to everybody that might be a negative thing, but I am not. Like before, what I would do is we record on two channels, left and right, depending on the person. And then what I'll do is I would go through and I would mute the other channel when that person's not talking, so that, and this doesn't happen as much anymore, and I think that's why I stopped doing it. Chris used to get in there and he would have that breathing happening, and it's not intentional, because I would do it too. I would, you know, you have that one of those days where you have a little bit of something in your nose and you don't realize it until you're checking the recording, and all of a sudden you hear that little whistle and you're like, damn it, I had something in my nose or something, it was making a whistle. Old fart. I don't hyper focus on that anymore as I used to, and hopefully that's not shown in the podcast as a negative. I just kind of at some point realized I'm doing, it's a bit much. Like it's that's not required. So now I just kind of put the two, I just smash the two audio channels together, export it, and then cut out whatever's in there that's kind of a mess up or a spoiler or, you know, an accidental spoiler slip or maybe one of us stuttering too much or dog barking. But I think there is an element that I kind of lost from those old podcasts. So this is sort of an element that I'm gaining through doing live streams and doing the videos that I'm doing, is that I think some people do appreciate the naturalness of a slip up, the naturalness of, say, like a minute ago, and I'll probably leave it in the podcast, Yuki snoring really loud and me and Chris yelling at him. It makes it a little more personal to people to get those. And I used to be the type that anything that's not professional, cut it out. And I think I lost a lot of it. And I think early on we had a little bit of that in the bloopers, but at some point we got very professional to the point where we didn't slip up and need bloopers. And at some point people were going, where's the bloopers? And it's like, we got to the point where we didn't really blooper much anymore. But I think there was an aspect of sort of losing a lot of that personality through just kind of, I guess, keeping very professional about everything. But you sort of lose a charm from that. So that is something that I do kind of think is a failure on my own part that I do openly admit. So, yeah. Bad Andrew.
No, not that it's necessarily bad. It's just learning as we go.
Well, I mean, that also did kind of garner us a lot of adult listeners. A lot of our audience are more adult, which is not a bad thing. I love talking to a lot of people, and I think that's sort of, in some cases, a lot of turnoff for a lot of people. I think there's probably some people that enjoyed listening to Chris try to make a horse noise, and it sounded like a dog. But anyways, last one is, how do you handle criticism attacks because people don't agree with what you said?
It's been difficult. I'm not going to say it's been easy. It's been a mixed bag. Sometimes, most of the time, it just rolls off the back. Sometimes there's just this one that just gets you just in a certain way. My biggest one was being told that I'm something that I'm not. Because of my attempt at trying to stay apolitical, one group that I technically align with felt that I aligned with their opposite, and it bugged the crap out of me and really, really, really bothered
me. There's a reason why we avoid political talk. It's just it's just like there's been discussion about unions based on news articles and stuff like that. And it's just one of those things where you have to be one or the other, and it sucks. I hate that we've gotten to the point where it's just, you have to be one or the other.
Yes.
But,
I don't want political stuff in my anime. My anime is apolitical. It has no side. My friends who like anime can be on either side. It does not matter. But at the same time, don't make me into something that I'm not, because I'm not. I am neither side, honestly.
I think in general, whenever somebody, I think the most frustrating stuff is in general a case where somebody says you're something you're not.
Yep.
And I mean, that's the experience that I had here recently with Mushoku Mondays. And those that are keeping up with Mushoku Mondays, they know exactly what I'm talking about. There was this whole situation where I was not a fan of something. And then when I would theorize, I would sometimes throw in jokes in there, and I was theorizing on something, and everybody hated that I was theorizing on it. And at some point I realized I just don't care to talk about this anymore. Like it really feels like you guys don't want me to talk about this and have fun with this, and I'm tired of talking about it. So dealing with that talk, that I literally just walked away from it. And that's kind of been my general consistency for the most part, because technically I've been on the internet since 97. I don't know, probably even more earlier than that. I've been around the internet for long enough to have been on both sides of hate, cyberbullying, and anger and nastiness that the internet brings because anonymity. People just in general don't realize that there's somebody else on the other side of the keyboard or the screen, and it makes it much more difficult for people to sort of curb the way they talk, versus when you're in front of somebody, you typically do curb the way that you talk a little more. And so I've dealt with a lot of it, and I've dealt with really nasty comments. Most of the cases, I just ignore it, because it's like, I've had times where, yes, I get really nasty comments, and I would reply to it saying, you know, I'm sorry that you feel that way. Hopefully next time you enjoy the content that I do. And people quickly correct themselves, like, man, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to be that nasty. I was having a bad day or something like that. And it's just like, shrug, move on. They end up being like really good friends in the future. I've always either kind of took it from two different perspectives. One being that I give them the benefit of the doubt that they had a bad day, because I've had bad days and said things I didn't really mean on the internet, or just completely walk away, because my time's better spent with somebody that appreciates what I do. And that's the people that I want to do good content for, the people that appreciate what I'm doing. I'm not going to be everybody's content. The stuff that I make on YouTube is not going to work for everybody. And yes, I want to spend some time to sort of try to figure out what people are kind of missing and not liking. But at the same time, if I focus on everybody that doesn't like my content, I'll never have the time for the people that do enjoy my content. And those are the people that are technically supporting and they're on a daily basis watching the videos and responding and stuff like that. For the most part, I do think that I've built a way of not letting things affect me, but I'm not impervious to criticism and stuff. I've had times where it has. I don't think I've ever had somebody, like, if somebody pops into the live stream and says, "My gosh, neckbeard! My gosh, neckbeard! Oh my gosh, you look ugly," or something like that. It's always like, okay, move on. I've gained the fortitude to know that it just doesn't matter. It really isn't worth even responding to most of the time. In most cases, I'll just laugh it off. But I have to admit that there is times where somebody does say something, and it's not so much that I go, "Man, they're right. I am not the most handsome guy. I'm not a pretty person to look at," or, "Man, I did screw up how to pronounce that word," which I get a lot.
We do get a lot of that.
But it's more of a thing that every now and then, it's sort of the only effect that I've really had that I struggle with is every now and then I do have times where it goes, it makes me lose a motivation. That's the only thing that's really I've ever experienced, is where somebody says something and it sticks in my mind and it ruins my motivation for going forward. It's just one of those, like, again, prime example. It was the most recent example that it really did hit me heavy was a few weeks ago. I had a Mushroom Monday where I was like, I don't know if I want to continue doing this. Like, it's like, it killed my motivation. I don't care. And I fully acknowledge that the people that were affecting me was like three people amongst, I mean, for the premiere, it was 150 people. And for how many views it'll get is probably upwards of 2,000 to 3,000 people will watch the actual video. These three people got me so much that it was ruining my motivation. I had to keep reminding myself, it's just these three people. Why not continue doing it? Because these, but again, it's not that I was going to stop doing it, because I have way too much fun with doing it. I look forward to Mushroom Monday every week. It literally takes me probably upwards of at least five hours of prep, record, edit, and then another like 2 hours for all the testing, and then the premiere itself, which I'm engaging with. So we're looking at 6 to 8 hours total of time I spend every week on making Mushroom Mondays. It has to be pretty damn rewarding for me alone that I would want to do it every week, because yeah, it's literally just the, you know, at the moment, like 2,000 to 3,000 views it might get per episode, plus the 150 that are on the premiere itself, which is concurrent. It fluctuates, obviously. There has to be some reward to it. And yes, a lot of that reward is those that are supporting, those that are members of it, those that pay into Patreon. Those people mean a lot to me. Thank you guys. But there is a reward aspect of it, of just the enjoyment of the experience. It has become literally when everybody says, "My gosh, I love Mushroom Mondays. Thanks for doing Mushroom Mondays." It's literally like, I thank you, because you guys are making this an enjoyment thing for me. This is something I enjoy, and I love the feedback and the support everybody's done. The people that spend the time, like Adrian and stuff, that are spending the time to keep it clean from spoilers for not just myself, but people that are reading along with it. That has become an experience. Where was I talking about? What was the original?
Criticism.
Oh, yeah, criticism. I do admit that there's times where, and that was a recent example where it just, wow, do I want to keep doing this? I mean, people seen it in the Mushroom Mondays. I kind of mentioned it there. It was like, I just feel like, do I just go back to just posting it? Do I lock up the premiere itself chats? What do I do? And it was one of those things where I probably shouldn't have been so open about it, because I really don't like airing out my laundry. But it was the support that sort of just kind of reminded me that, like, you know, look, it's just three people. And again, it was just those three people or whatever that got me to that point.
Well, that was just like mine. I mean, mine was a closely held core belief of mine, and to be said that I was not that. And looking back on it now, it was like, what, 4 or 5 people out of that group that did that. And it was like, I can't stop just because of those people. It, just keep on moving.
Yeah. Like I said, I think the one that kind of bugs me the most, and it's one of those ones that I just don't even give them the time of day, is when people say that you are something you're not. or they assume that you have this belief in something because you don't agree with their way of thinking about this process or whatever. So it's a struggle, but at the same time, like I said, I'm a positive person. I've been through plenty enough I think everybody has that point, which you've experienced so much stuff that really kind of breaks you down that it doesn't matter anymore. Like everybody at some point in their life, I don't wish this upon anybody. At some point, everybody in their life at some point will have that clarity point where they realize, I've been through this. I've dealt with this. A lot of people, it's going to be loss of somebody. This doesn't matter. Like,
yeah,
you call me a neckbeard or making some comment on my looks or complaining about how I pronounce this word. In the grand scheme of things, it doesn't matter. And I came to some realization point at some point in my life that I don't care. I'd rather, instead of dwell on this negativity right here, I'd rather go over here and make something for somebody that enjoys it. So that's the kind of driving force in the voice. There we go. There's somebody else going to complain about how I pronounce force, driving force.
Well, it's better than ambiguity. Ambiguity.
Yeah. And I have tons of recordings of me butchering Japanese names, especially early on. It took me a while to get to that point where I'm pretty confident about how I pronounce stuff now.
Well, especially since when I showed you the kana chart and all that, did that help? Do you remember?
No, I think the big helping point for me for pronunciation was to slow the hell down and stick to those, we call it the each syllable, whatever, you know, keep it to, you know, each breakdown of typically two letters.
It's two letters.
Kind of thing. So that was a huge help because we're so used to it in English language, just kind of grouping these massive sets of letters together.
Yeah.
And they're very kind of not that.
Yeah. Learning the kana and the hiragana helped me a lot in understanding how they pronounce their words.
Anyways, that's it. We managed to wrap up the mailbag episode with all of the questions that we currently have in the submit questions area, unless I miss something, and then somebody will say, hey, you missed this one. You just reply to it and say, hey, you missed this one, and I'll get it later.
So this is a call to all of you. Get on the Discord. Get on the mailbag section.
Get on
Discord. Ask the questions.
Discord. Get on the Discord.
Because now we're out of questions.
Yeah. There you go.
So.
And so
it's on you guys.
Put your questions in there so they can be answered later this year. Doesn't boast any confidence when it took us this long to get these ones done. But again, that was the reason why I wanted to do a mailbag. Some of these questions, like I said, were back in January, and it's like I hate when it gets that long. So anyways, we thank you guys for the questions. Thank you guys for jumping onto here. Those, again, that support us either by telling other people about us. Just got a shout out on Twitter. I should probably say thank you on here just for that sake. So they get a special shout out because they said something on Twitter. They get a shout out on here. If I can type Twitter one-handed from a distance because my keyboard's way away from me. But no, I really do love when you guys get onto, you know, other social media and let people know about us. That means a lot to me. It was Specs the Beast said on Twitter that some of their favorite podcasts to listen to was Doesn't Matter. Number two, Otaku Spirit, and the rest doesn't matter because number two is us. But no, I appreciate it. Thanks for the shout out there. But yeah, everywhere people shout us out, it does mean a lot to us because word of mouth is the best way to help us grow. Always looking for growth. And yes, as per usual, love all the people that support us monetarily on Patreon through a tips link in order to, you know, one-time donation. And those that are on the YouTube channel that are become members of the channel itself currently have Mushoku Tensei. Mostly Mushoku Tensei emotes on there because we do Mushoku Mondays and it's fun spamming, you know, Aisha's in the chat and stuff like that. But it's a lot of fun. So, yeah, we thank you guys for listening. Hope you guys enjoyed this podcast episode. And as usual, you guys take care.
Oh.